Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, the managing editor of Turbo Machinery International. And today we welcome back the Mythbusters, Klaus Brunn and Rainer Kurtz, to talk about compressor maps. So they're going to talk about what they are, how they are generated, you know, what they're useful for, and terms like choke and surge. So welcome back. It's great to have you both on the show.
Well, thank you very much, Alyssa. Looking forward to this discussion. This is one of the topics that's maybe a little more technical, but it's probably one of the most important topics when you deal with turbo machinery and compressors in our industry.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the topic. And by the way, thanks for having us again. This is really one of the topics that practically always comes up when you talk about centrifugal gas compressors.
Okay, great. Let's just start simple. What is a compressor map and what can we do with it and where does it fit into the process, and then which are useful?
Well, at its most basic, it's really a graphical representation on how a centrifugal compressor behaves, right? It's somewhat of an oversimplification because there's more factors that play into it, but overall it gives a pretty accurate representation of what a compressor does within the system of where it operates. So a standard compressor map on one axis, on the y-axis, it usually has something called head. So it could be isentropic or polytropic head. Sometimes you also see pressure ratio. Sometimes you see a discharge pressure for a fixed suction pressure. So usually it's something related to pressure on the y-axis. And then on the x-axis, you usually have flow. And most of the time, that is volume flow. You sometimes see mass flow there, but that's not very common. Most of the time, you see volume flow on the y-axis. So on that map, then, you really have the performance of the compressor. And then really the question when you operate a centrifugal compressor is, okay, I have a certain pressure ratio that I need to meet, or a certain head that I need to meet. What is the flow? Or sometimes it's the other way around. I have a certain flow, and given a certain suction pressure, what is the discharge pressure? And so on that compressor map, there is a lot of lines, and the most common ones we call speed lines. And basically, the speed lines correspond to when a compressor is running at a fixed speed, let's say 10,000 RPM, 8,000 RPM, 7,000, 6,000 RPM. And each one of those goes across the map. And so basically, those speed lines are a function of what I said before, which is head versus flow. So they're a graphical representation of that. Again, they're somewhat of a simplification because there's other factors that can play in. But in for 99.9% of the cases, they're accurate enough and they're good enough. You also have in that map, you have what's called a surge line that's on the left. That's kind of an operating limit. We'll need to talk about that somewhere later. That's a topic in itself. And then on the right side of the map, you have something called a choke area or stone wall, and there's overload. There's a lot of different names that people use for that. And that also represents somewhat of a limitation of where the compressor can or cannot run, but it's also for many manufacturers a limit where you shouldn't be running. And then finally, you have on that map things called efficiency islands, and basically they correspond to the efficiency of the compressor. Not all compressor maps show that. Some of them do, some of them don't. But they basically allow you to look at the same map and also determine what the efficiency of the compressor is. So as I said before, really the standard head flow map gives you head versus flow, or pressure ratio versus flow, or something pressure versus flow. But if you superimpose on that the efficiency island, then you can also look on the same map without having to go to a different map, and you can see what the efficiency of the compressor at a certain operating point is. And when you look at that map, they look a little like ovals, and these ovals kind of look like islands. And so that's why we call them efficiency islands.
And when Klaus talks about efficiency islands, he really refers to the fact that these maps are really three dimensionals, but we can only put them in two dimensional on paper. And essentially, the three, if you will, axes that you want to display are head, flow, and efficiency. And then basically, you use, like on a map, where you have the elevation lines, you use the efficiency lines essentially in a very similar way. The other thing that you also have to be aware, and that often gets lost in discussions, the coordinates of the map that really directly affected by the compressor aerodynamics are head and flow. Now you can translate head into pressures or pressure ratios, and you can translate actual flow into mass flow, but ultimately the compressor aerodynamics, what happens aerodynamically in the compressor, is really described by head and actual flow. But that's also the coupling with the process, because if you run your compressor in a plant, essentially the plant, one way or another, will dictate the pressure ratio that it wants, which translates into head, and the flow that it wants, and that is typically a standard flow or mass flow, that you can translate that back into the actual flow. So that's really why Klaus is so adamant about the head versus flow map, because that is really the tool that allows you to determine what the compressor does in a given application where you use that compressor.
Yeah, and I mean it's important to understand that it's both a measurement, right? I mean, you could create a compressor map by just measuring a lot of points. When you measure, you know, you take a compressor and you run it at a certain flow and you pose some pressure across it, you put a suction in a discharge valve or just one valve on it, and then you could measure it. And so it's measurement. But obviously, any kind of physical measurement has to correspond to some physics. And so there are some very easy and logical physics that correspond to, for example, these flow lines. They really correspond. They're extrapolations of the fan laws, right? When you get into turbo machinery, there's a thing called the fan laws, and they relate the head and flow and power and a number of other things to sizing and scaling and speed. And the fan laws you can really use to directly extrapolate these lines. And that's, by the way, why they're also more or less parallel, because they're basically extrapolations. If you get one speed line, you could theoretically, based on the fan laws, you could extrapolate other speed lines. You could do a 5,000 RPM speed line, and then you could mess around with the fan laws, and you could extrapolate a 6,000, 7,000, 8,000. Now, in reality, what happens is these are measured and really not measured for the entire compressor, but when a manufacturer puts them together, they predict them from individual measurements for each stage, and then you come up with a map as a whole. But so there is, it's kind of a mix of measurement and physical understanding, and that makes that map really valuable. But as Reiner stated, at its most basic, it's something that allows you to tell you what the compressor is going to do given an operating condition. And this is very important because, I mean, what do you need a compressor for? You need a compressor to make pressure, right? Pressure ratio of fluid. And so what you want to know is, if I have this compressor and I run it at a certain speed, which, by the way, also requires a certain amount of power, then how much pressure ratio do I get out of this machine at what flows? And that's what the map gives you. And by the way, Reiner kind of implied this already, but if you look at basic physics, head multiplied by flow, and that would be mass flow, but I mean, you can take volume flow, mass multiplied by density, then you get mass flow, is power. So that map also gives you power. And it gives you efficiency if you have the efficiency island on there. So it tells you a tremendous amount about the operation of the compressor in a very nice, simple, relatively easy to understand graphical form. And then it also tells you about the limits of operation, surge and choke.
One of the things you may be a bit thinking about this, the speed lines that Klaus talked about on the map. Ultimately, when you control a compressor, meaning if you look for means how to adapt that compressor to some desired operating conditions, there are compressors that are capable of operating at variable speed. And it's basically a question of the driver. If you have a driver for the compressor that can actually change the speed, you can see electric motor or two-shaft gas turbine, then that's a way of adapting the compressor to operating conditions. There are, by the way, also some other means. You can, for example, also have variable geometry in the compressor. And that variable geometry, for example, if you have variable inlet guide vanes, you could also make a map where essentially the speed lines, if you will, are replaced by the setting of your inlet vanes. Now, the other thing that I also want to point out is you may ask yourself, so, okay, why are we dealing with these mysterious things like head and actual flow if what we really want is pressure, suction and discharge pressure and mass flow? The reason for that is that, yes, you can draw maps that show pressure ratio over mass flow. The problem is that these maps are actually only correct for one set of inlet conditions. So as soon as you change the gas composition or the inlet temperature slightly, these maps are no longer valid. Whereas the head versus flow maps give you the capability to vary the inlet conditions, which many processes do, over a reasonable rate. This is essentially a discussion about I have a process and I have a compressor, and how can I use process variables and determine from them where do I want to operate and where do I have to operate my compressor?
This is really a good point because you know, the nice thing about head versus volume flows, as Rainer said, it's still a simple and easy to understand map. It has a lot of lines on it, but it's still understandable. You can make this even more simpler, and you can use something called a head coefficient versus a flow coefficient map, where suddenly all these lines superimpose or collapse onto a single line. And that's actually even more universal in the sense that you just have a single line, and sometimes still it's a number of lines because there's Mach number, Reynolds number effects, et cetera. But it's a more simple map, but it makes it harder to understand for an operator. So it's always a question of what does the operator want, and keep it relatively generic. So the head versus flow map is relatively generic. Many operators say they want pressure ratio, right? Because pressure is something you can understand. You actually measure it, right? You have pressure transducers. Head is not something that you usually measure directly, and so you have to calculate it from your pressure minimum. So operators very often say that you want the pressure on the y-axis. But the problem, as Rainer stated, is, yeah, that's interesting and good. But if you deviate on your suction pressure, let's say, or significantly, then suddenly that entire map isn't useful anymore. And I mean, we had a discussion in one of the previous podcasts about what we call digital twin, right? In its most basic form, a compressor map is a digital twin, right? It gives you a graphic representation of what a compressor does. It's not the most sophisticated digital twin, but it's a twin, and it tells you in most cases reasonably accurately as to what your compressor is going to do given the system conditions that are imposed on it. And that's kind of what you need to know. You need to know if my compressor is going to behave in a certain way. Or let's say I'm going to close my suction valve because my process requires maybe a little less flow. I want to know before I do that what my machine is going to do. And you can look up on the map what's going to happen and predict that very nicely. So it's a very good map, both from a physical understanding perspective, but also from knowing how your machine is going to behave from an empirical sense for measurements.
One thing that we haven't talked about yet is these maps don't come out of nowhere. You can either use, or the manufacturer of the compressor can either use experience and calculations and numerical simulations to determine how that map for the compressor looks like before they build it. But you can also use test data, having the machine on a test stand or operating the machine in the field to create data that allows you to do the map. In general, and I'm not just saying that because we're working in that industry, predictions of compressor performance tend to be relatively accurate. So So as a starting point, they're always very good. And then you can decide whether you want to have some additional test data to verify that map, because tests are expensive and it's complicated to get a lot of points on a given map. And you can do that in a factory setting or in a field setting.
Yeah, this is important. And I know Alyssa probably wants to move on here to search and choke, because we mentioned that before, and that's an important topic. But before we do that, I did want to state, what Rainer stated is basically these map can be predictions, and in most of the time they're predictions from individual stages. So a typical centrifugal compressor will have multiple stages, not all of them, but we'll have 2, 3, 4, 5 stages. And so you can combine these individual maps in a process that then gives you the entire compressor map. It's mathematically not that challenging. It's done all the time, but you basically superimpose those individual stage maps to give you the overall compressor map, including the surge and really the choke area on that map. One last thing. Oh, and by the way, you can also use CFD nowadays reasonably accurately to even predict what the map is going to look like. And our technology has really come a long way where we can actually design compressors, get most of its map reasonably accurately with CFD. I mean, you still have to anchor your CFD tools, but they've gotten pretty good. The last thing I did want to mention, we haven't mentioned on those speed lines, is that they're also, you can kind of go through a mathematical derivation. It's kind of fun to do that. And you can actually show that if you have a compressor that's purely radial discharge, then you will actually get a speed line that theoretically, at least, should look just like a flat horizontal kind of line. And if it's backswept, like most centrifugal compellers are, then you get some kind of angle. That angle relates to the backswept angle. And if it's theoretically forward swept, which you never really see in a centrifugal compressor, you'd get a little more head, but you'd actually get, theoretically at least, get a line that would be increasing with volume flow. And the reason that these lines then in reality droop off at both ends, that they're not straight lines following that angle, is because you have losses in the system. You have blockage losses, your secondary flow losses, your boundary layer losses, your separation losses. You have all these kind of losses that come in, which means that it's not ideal. Ideal physics doesn't work, and so you have to include those, and that's why your lines are you know, drooping off at both ends. But that's kind of the basic physics of where these speed line comes from, and the speed lines is what really makes it matter.
Okay, thank you, Klaus and Rainer, for part one on compressor maps. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this episode of the Turbo Time podcast. Be sure to check out part two of compressor maps next week on Surge and Choke. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, and we will see you next time.